Starting a little bit late here. Looks like 1355 or 155 in layman's terms. Finance Committee for Monday, November the 5th. Item number one is the approval of the minutes from the October 1st, 2018 meeting.
I make a motion to approve.
Second.
Okay. All right, any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Ayes have it. Item number two is a public comment period. If anybody would like to give us a couple of minutes of a comment, if you have, and please step up to the podium and give us your name and address for the record. We'll give you 2 minutes. Anybody? Kevin Shirley, you got something to say? Me and my big mouth.
Gary Santos is great.
Oh, I love you, Kevin. All right. Anybody else? Thank you very much. We will go to item number three now, which is appeal hearing of business licensing tax, and I will defer to our attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Santos and members of the committee. This is an appeal, a business license fee appeal that staff will be presenting. Just a few of the ground rules, and we can proceed. The first item of business is as corporation counsel for the town, my obligation is to the town and staff. I cannot advise the committee. And for that, we've brought in Mr. Claude Tackett. So therefore, if the committee has any questions, Mr. Tackett should answer them, as well as if executive session is necessary, Mr. Tackett will be able to explain the law or any legal questions, just so we understand our roles. The second item of business is a small procedural item. This morning, we did receive from the applicant a slide presentation. It was very late, but I do believe it's been able to, it will be able to move forward if it is their wish. On behalf of the town and on behalf of staff, we certainly have no objection to them presenting it. That is a decision that that the committee should make. And finally, Mr. Santos, I believe you've been provided with the procedural rules that should be read into the record.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'll go ahead and read it as mentioned by our counsel. Business license appeal procedure. A file comprising the material related to this business license appeal has been furnished to each member of the committee and the applicant. Certain financial information contained in this file and referenced during this hearing will be treated as sensitive and confidential. The town will not refer to a specific information or figures detailed in business licensing applications due to state legislation governing the treatment of such information. The hearing procedures shall be as follows. A, the parties and or their representatives will introduce themselves for the record. B, the appellant or his representative will deliver a short, concise statement of the appellant's position in no longer than 10 minutes. C, Ms. Turner, the town's representative, will deliver a short, concise statement of the town's position in no longer than 10 minutes. D, the appellant or their representative may present the appellant's position by calling up to 3 witnesses and or introduce supportive evidence during the up to 30 minutes allotted to the appellant's case. E, the town representative may cross-examine any witness or rebut any evidence. F, the members of the committee may examine any witness or review any evidence. G, Ms. Turner, the town representative, will present the town's position by calling up to 3 witnesses and or presenting any supportive evidence during the 30 minutes allotted to the town's case. H, the appellant may cross-examine any witness or rebut any evidence offered by the town. I, the members of the committee may examine any witness or review any evidence. J, the appellant may have up to 5 minutes to make a closing argument. K, the town's representative may have up to 5 minutes to make a closing argument. L, the chairman of the committee will close the proceedings and the committee may adjourn to executive session to receive legal advice should they so request. M, upon returning to regular session, the committee may reach a decision at that time. However, the committee has up to 20 days in which to render their decision, which will be placed in writing by the business license official. And the decision of the finance committee shall be final unless the appeal process is continued through the circuit court of the appropriate jurisdiction. Number two, the hearing will not be conducted according to the rules of evidence relating to examination of witnesses or the presentation of evidence. Any relevant evidence shall be admissible, including hearsay, if it is the sort of the evidence on which responsible persons are accustomed to rely in the conduct of serious affairs. 3, evidence determined to be relevant by the chairman of the committee, regardless of its admissibility in the court of law, shall not be excluded. 4, documentary evidence may be received in the form of copies or excerpts. 5, notice may be taken judiciously, I'm not sure about that word, is it cognizable? Is that close enough? Facts or generally recognized technical or scientific facts within the committee's specialized knowledge. Parties shall be notified either before or during the hearing of the material noticed and afforded an opportunity to contest. The committee's experiences, competence, and specialized knowledge shall be utilized in evaluation of the evidence. Each party is entitled to submit proposed findings. Number 6, each party is entitled to submit proposed findings, a memorandum of points and authorities, and any additional information that they feel appropriate to the committee. Thank you. So, there we go.
So we'll start with the introductions. My name is Stephanie Cuevas. I am the Director of Operations at First String Research.
I'm Christina Greck. I am the Director of Translational Research at First String.
Hi, I'm Dr. Carl Atkinson. I'm an MUSE employee. I'm an associate professor in immunology.
Okay, one quick second. Who's going to be keeping the time? Okay, that's very important.
Yeah. And my name is Grant Carwile. I'm a board member of First String Research, resident of Mount Pleasant, and an early investor since 2007 in the company.
My name is Steve Spear. I'm a board member also and a founding investor in the company.
Okay. I'm Melinda Turner, business license official for Town of Mount Pleasant.
And Marcy Kotov, CFO for Town of Mount Pleasant.
Very good.
And David Pagliarini, legal counsel for the Town of Mount Pleasant.
Okay. You want to go ahead and just say your name?
Claude Tackett, representing the planning committee.
All right, thank you. Okay, Ms. Kotov, do we defer to you to start, or?
The appellant makes the beginning.
Okay, appellant.
Okay, great. So First String Research is a biotechnology company focused on developing and bringing to the market products to treat diseases with unmet medical needs, such as cutaneous radiation injury, diabetic foot ulcers, venous leg ulcers, and cutaneous scarring. We have developed a first-in-class product called Grenexin Gel that has demonstrated safety and efficacy in several FDA-regulated clinical and non-clinical studies. And we're currently advancing Grenexin Gel toward FDA's new drug application filing, or NDA filing, for cutaneous radiation injury, followed by label expansion in diabetic foot ulcers, venous leg ulcers, and cutaneous scarring. We're here today to discuss with you the unique nature of our business and why federal grant funds should be excluded from the definition of gross receipts under the Business License Ordinance, or at least why Mount Pleasant should create a new classification of biotech companies that are taxed differently. We have several collaborating institutions and for-profit contractors that we have hired to conduct our research. The federal grant funds that we received are earmarked specifically for these institutions and for-profit contractors. A vast majority of First String's gross receipts are funds from federal grants awarded to First String by agencies such as the National Institutes of Health and the Department of Defense under programs that support cutting-edge research. These grant funds are regulated by the federal agencies that award them and are either direct pre-budgeted pass-throughs that are earmarked for collaborating institutions that conduct the research on our behalf, such as MUSC or other for-profit contractors outside the state, or the funds are received as reimbursement for research activities that have already been expensed. The bottom line here is that First String does not generate true revenue or profit, as would be the case for a client-based or service business such as a restaurant or a clinical research organization such as PMG Research or Coastal Carolina Research Center. Until we have an FDA-approved product and set up manufacturing operations and sales, we operate solely as an administrative office in Mount Pleasant. We are, as far as we know, the only biotechnology company that came out of MUSC focused on drug development in Mount Pleasant, and we have the potential to be a true homegrown success here. We were honored to be a part of your economic development tour earlier this year and to be considered a company that Mount Pleasant is interested in nurturing. Our continued growth will accompany the creation of new high-paying jobs and will stimulate new economic development. Therefore, with your help, we hope to continue to grow here and put Mount Pleasant on the map as a destination for high-value biotechnology companies.
Okay, thank you very much. Sure. Okay, Ms. Turner.
Good afternoon. First String Research is appealing staff's application of the Mount Pleasant Business License Ordinance. The application for appeal was dated and received October the 1st. First String Research conducts research and development in biotechnology. The business is located at 300 West Coleman Boulevard, Suite 203 in Mount Pleasant. Their only business license is obtained here in Mount Pleasant. In summary, I want to give you a breakdown of what's taken place over the last few months. On January 23rd, Melody Dangerfield, Assistant Business License Official, sent a letter notifying the business, First String Research, Inc., of an audit to be scheduled for February the 9th for the license periods 2015-2016, 2016-2017, 2017-2018 to be here at Town Hall. Ms. Dangerfield followed up on February the 6th to confirm notification of the audit, and when this was unsuccessful, she followed up via telephone message on May the 7th. Then the account was flagged so that when the business came to renew the license for the next year, 2018-2019, that we would make sure the audit was completed. On July the 23rd, Ms. Dangerfield sent an email acknowledging receipt of their renewal payment for 18-19 and explained that the business license would not be issued until the audit was completed. Later, the audit was rescheduled for August the 9th at 3 p.m. and again at 11 a.m. as requested by the Director of Operations. Ms. Dangerfield conducted the audit on August the 9th, and the results were sent to the business on August the 15th. Next, Ms. Dangerfield, Jonathan Edwards, Deputy CFO, Lauren Sims, Community and Government Affairs Chief, and I met with Dr. Gunnaker and Ms. Kubas to discuss the audit results dated August the 25th. First String explained that the majority of their income declared on the business tax returns is from grant funds awarded by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services together with the Department of Defense. And the licensee provided contact information for their accountant, Colin Hill, with Cherry Pickert, located out of Raleigh, North Carolina. On August the 28th, Mr. Edwards and I talked with Mr. Hill, and we confirmed the Internal Revenue Service definition that grant funds are included in gross income. After the conversation, audited financial statements were provided, and additional emails were exchanged. On September the 5th, Mr. Edwards and I talked to Lisa Bedden with Green Finney LLP, the town's external audit firm. And Ms. Bedden agreed with staff's position that grant funds are considered gross income according to both the Internal Revenue Code and the Mount Pleasant Business License Ordinance. She also pointed out that the entity, First String Research, Inc., is a business as defined in our town ordinance in Section 2. Next, on September the 7th, staff corresponded with the licensee and provided amounts due the town. Follow-up emails were exchanged, and a meeting that included Marcy Kotoff, Chief Financial Officer, was scheduled for September the 19th. During this meeting, the licensee was accompanied by Jim McNabb, Chairman of the Board of First String Research. Together, they explained that their position is that the business is unique to Mount Pleasant. They also explained the grant funds stipulate how funds will be spent for clinical trials, which are partly conducted by Medical University of South Carolina, and that paying taxes is not included as part of the grants. As such, they are requesting special consideration in the application of the Mount Pleasant Business License Ordinance. Ms. Kotoff explained that the town also deals with large federal grants and the various expenses are allowable. She further stated that staff is tasked with administering the ordinance fairly and equitably to all businesses operating in the town. And we are unable to identify ordinance language to treat First String Research any differently. We discussed the Economic Development Incentive Program and provided the ordinance. During the meeting, we also discussed that pursuant to South Carolina Code Section 5-7-30, municipalities are required to perform business license tax calculations on gross income. A business license tax is not a property tax, an income tax, or a sales tax. And according to the Municipal Association of South Carolina Handbook, a business license is a method of requiring a business or occupation to contribute its share in support of the government. The handbook further explains that licensing is an excise tax for the privilege of doing business, and the value of the privilege extended is measured by the business's gross receipts. On September the 20th, payment was made under protest for four license years, 2015-16, 2016-17, 2017-18, 2018-19. And then on October the 1st, business license application was filed.
Okay, thank you very much. All right. Ma'am, you may present your position by calling up to three witnesses.
So we did include a presentation, but for the purposes of brevity and focus, I'm going to let you look at that on your own time. Basically, it highlights the basis of our technology and exhibits the uniqueness of our company. One of the things that I do want to highlight that's within those slides is the layout of our relationship in terms of how we receive these grant funds and how they're used. And for that purposes, we've brought Dr. Atkinson here as a close collaborator to outline exactly the pass-through and how that plays out.
Okay, ma'am, can you just give your name just for the record? I just want to make sure, because
So I'm Christina Grack, and I'm the Director of Translational Research at First String.
You don't have to keep saying that, just your name, so she has it for the record.
She's
doing the minutes, so I just want to make sure it's accurate.
Stand.
Thank you.
Do you want me to say it again? Sure. Christina Grack. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm Carl Atkinson. So I've been asked to provide some context of how the grants are applied for and how the money is then distributed to really show how First String is really a flow-through organization. So the grants that we write together are usually to the National Institute of Health or the Department of Defense. And how they're constructed is that we have a research idea to test their novel product. So there are some way ahead on certain disease areas, and we're still looking into new areas. I have no financial relationship with First String whatsoever. I'm a researcher at MUSC. So when we come up with a grant idea to look for a new therapeutic target or a new disease that we may be able to modulate with a very, very novel first-in-class drug, we write a research grant to the National Institute of Health, or DOD. And component within that is working out how much the research is going to cost. So within that, the experiments are usually done within my laboratory or other laboratories at MUSC. And we write in the science that we want to test, the idea we want to test, and then we also write the budget for how much it's going to cost. Now, when that grant gets sent to those institutions, the NIH or the DOD, they're reviewed by a panel of experts, and part of that actual review process is the budget itself. So should that award be made, the money comes back to First String, and they literally pass the dollar amount that we asked for within that grant to do the research directly to MUSC or other institutions. So it really is a total flow through of money that is they have no control over. The amount that we ask for is the amount that gets awarded, and the amount that is awarded flows directly to us. So I wanted to provide that as some kind of context, that it isn't income that they have per se, it's directly flowed to a different institution.
Okay, thank you very much.
The other point I wanted to point out with this is that MUSC is $276 million they've required in NIH money in the last year alone. So it really is an ideas institute, a greenhouse. And as an MUSC investigator, one of our biggest problems is spinning out those ideas into sort of commercial products, and more importantly, drugs that can actually help the community. So
it is very difficult for us to do that and set these things up. So having a town that was permissive to be able to set up biotechnologies would be really important. And I think that's also important when more than 50% of your faculty at MUSC work and live in this town. So being able to have local communities or local infrastructure of businesses would be very important for us.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, you good? Yeah. All right. So the town has an opportunity to cross-examine the witnesses if you'd like.
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Oh, good. We're moving on. All right. Members of the committee may examine any witnesses or review any evidence if they would like.
I just had one question.
Okay, Mr. Bustos.
It seems to me that the basis of your appeal, what you're saying, is that you're a unique company and you should not be paying business license fees, or that, I mean, you know, obviously you know you have to pay a business license fee. So you're saying that the sole ground is because you're unique, you get these grants, that it shouldn't be included as in your gross receipts?
No, due to the type of money that is coming into First Ring, which is the federal grant funds, we do not believe that those should be part of the definition of gross receipts under your ordinance due to, as Carl was saying, they completely flow through the company. They're either pass-through costs that come in and we give directly to our institutions like MUSC and other external for-profit contractors that do the research on our behalf, or the funds are reimbursed to us for research activities that have already been expensed. And these funds, by the way, are regulated by the federal agencies that award them.
Okay. And then, so on the town side, the IRS says that those funds specifically are to be included? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, okay.
Thank you. Ms. Landing?
Okay, I have several questions. So going back again, first of all, the fact that, for instance, MUSC has a project they're researching. They apply to NIH themselves, no, through you.
Yes.
And then when that money flows through you directly to them, it's for that project. And so, again, I can see where you're coming from. You don't feel that that is revenue that you generated. You feel that as a pass-through, you have just essentially facilitated the process.
It's important to note that the First Ring doesn't make any money. We don't have a commercial product yet. We don't make any true revenue or profit as would be, as I said, with like a client-based or service-based business.
Okay. Yeah. I actually worked at the Edward Jones Building at Duke for a year as a researcher, so I understand that aspect.
Gotcha.
Going back for a couple minutes. So federal grants, is it possible to distinguish between different types of federal grants? Like some things, because I know that, I mean, lots and lots of businesses apply for grants, and then that's how they run their business in many cases, including nonprofits as well as for-profit businesses. Technically, they're for-profit, but they don't have a profit right now.
Right.
They're still more in the early stages in that sense. There is no distinguishing between a federal grant that is a flow through to a specific research project versus a federal grant that is just to do general operations?
So what happens is when we do an audit, which this was, we look at what you file on your tax return. So unless it was somehow delineate there, and then we would have to change our ordinance and look at different pieces. But right now, it's all considered both under our ordinance and the IRS to be gross income.
Okay. So it gets tricky because any business that's let's just use the example of a startup. I don't know how long y'all have all actually been doing this, but any business that's a startup is potentially not going to have any profit for a while. And so by that definition alone, we couldn't say, oh, yeah, that means you're exempt from business taxes on this money. Has anybody before it was mentioned today I shouldn't say that because I'm sure you did mention it, but has anybody made it clear what the economic development incentive package is about?
The program you guys have for that, we were provided a copy of that. We've looked through that, yes.
Okay, because I'm recently appointed economic development chair, and it would be something we might be able to talk about afterwards, separate from this conversation, that that's based in, you know, on bringing in business that wouldn't be here and doesn't have to be in Mount Pleasant. And so if we can bring in, ultimately, eventually, hopefully, you get to a place where you discover something through the researchers, and then you're selling it, and you're happily here in Mount Pleasant and paying much higher business taxes. So so the idea behind that is economic development is to help you not only choose to be here, you're already here, but choose to stay here and grow your business here. So that might be that's a separate conversation, but I'll just say, even if this turns out not to work in your favor, you might have to just look into other avenues. So,
I mean, there is a second aspect here where that sounds very incentivizing to us. There's a component where we want to encourage future companies to also come to Mount Pleasant. And without having the appropriate regulations in place that encourage them to do so, the way things are laid out now, then that's only going to hurt things in the long run.
Right.
And that's a part of what we're trying to do here today, too, is not set just a precedence for us, but for, you know, stimulating the economy for future companies, getting folks to MUSC interested and also coming and staying in Mount Pleasant as successful businesses.
Okay, so just again, I understand that, and actually biotech is one of the identified areas, not only with the Charleston Chamber of Commerce, but with our economic development team. So yes, we do want to do that. The only thing I'm saying here is that prior to this happening, maybe that discussion could have been had, and in the future it will. And that may just be something that has to be, in other words, a separate contract negotiation from, because for us to change, it sounds like we're trying to change a law. If we come in today and say, oh, yes, we'll make an exception here, it sounds like we're trying to tell the IRS they're not, we're not exactly in a position to do that, are we?
No, I wouldn't think so.
So that's a very difficult area. Thank you.
All right. Just a quick question for me, because this is all kind of new to me. When you get the grant money, you receive the grant money, I take it you put it in the bank, until you make the decision on when you're going to give it to whoever it is, whether it's medical university or whatever? Where does
yes
it go?
Yes and no.
Yes and no? Okay.
So we draw down the funds from a, I guess if you want to call it an account that is held by the federal agency. We draw down the funds as we need them when our expenses come up to pass through to the institutions that we're collaborating with.
When you say when your expenses come through, these expenses from your company? Maybe,
the monies that we have to give to the external institutions that do the research on our behalf.
So the way it's split out into budgets, right? Mm-hmm. And each of those budgets is labeled, basically, even if it's just, you know, purchasing reagents to complete a study. But whatever the case is once those budgets have reached that, I guess, that stage, we pull out those funds and distribute them to our collaborating partners.
Right. So you're actually paying people who are doing work for you? Is that, I'm trying to understand it. So.
Well, we're not paying.
Yeah,
they
are.
The grant.
Through the grants.
Right.
Federal government.
Right.
Okay, so that, but if they weren't paying it, you'd have to pay it yourself.
We would if we needed that work to be done, but we don't have those funds.
Okay.
Right.
So there's no interest earned on any of those funds for y'all's benefit?
No.
Okay. All right.
Karen, another point of question?
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Landy?
Are you familiar with any other organizations like your company that in the early stages like this has been able to successfully argue this point and therefore get an exemption?
No.
Because that would be helpful. I don't mean in Mount Pleasant, but anywhere. I mean, surely NIH might know of some or...
We've looked into other case, like we tried to look into Research Triangle Park, you know, places in, you know, in Silicon Valley to try to look for some sort of precedents here. But Mount Pleasant, I think, is unique in terms of how they're taxing us. And there's no categorization, I guess, for the biotech company in Mount Pleasant, or that's really relevant even in these other areas. So
North Carolina doesn't have a business license tax per se. They have something that is called a business privilege tax. And biotechnology companies are not lumped into that category. It's typically specified for unique professions like accountants, lawyers, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm just going to repeat something again. I think this is one that, had it been handled from the beginning from an economic development viewpoint and looked at that respect, and that doesn't mean it's too late, but it might be too late for today's conversation.
Okay.
I mean, it can't be entertained later.
Anything else? Yeah. You good? You want to move forward?
I just want to make one, maybe this is our closing ahead of closing, if I may. My name is Grant Carwile. Believe me, as an investor in this company, not having gotten a single dime of my money back since 2007, I want nothing more than for us to be the literally billion-dollar company that we can be once we get the drug approval, we hope within the next couple of years, for our first label. Because then we can generate a tremendous amount of income, not only for the investors, but for the town and for the employees. All of our salaries are six figures plus at that point. If it's not, we understand that the law is written as it's written, and we understand that the IRS has categorized gross revenue to include grants. Obviously, we can't change that, nor can you. If we could change IRS rules, we would all have our preferences. But if it's not possible to find an exception in the town's ordinances to carve out some portion of our grant revenue that has just simply been a pass-through and not gone to pay the light bills or the salaries, for example, or the rent, then our respectful request would be that the town of Mount Pleasant consider developing a classification for companies like ours that taxes grant income differently in ordinance. We're currently classified as Category 7, I think.
Yeah, we're in rate class 7.
It happens to be the highest one of the business class categories, but we look through those definitions and don't find that we really fit in there because we don't provide a service or a product, or we don't do third-party research. And so if it's not possible to change or to find an exception or an exemption for some of our grant revenue for business tax purposes, for gross receipts purposes, then perhaps it's possible to look at creating a new category that companies like First String and others that are spun out of MUSC, because that is a common thing for MUSC to spin out these startup companies, that we could fit into that category and perhaps have a more favorable tax environment for development of new drugs.
Thank you very much. Okay. Are you finished?
I'm sorry, I keep jumping in, but maybe I might even need to ask Mr. DeMora a question. But again, there is a categorization of economic development where if a business is bringing outside jobs to Mount Pleasant, not recirculating things that we would already normally have, like restaurants or whatever, and also potentially bringing revenue to the town that would be from outside, which this certainly would be. Again, if you have a blockbuster drug, fine, that's going to be huge. So, and it would definitely be outside. There is a category available already, and I'm just wondering how, I mean, so it feels like we're cart behind the horse now or something. Am I?
No, I mean, if I may.
Yes, please.
Eric DeMora, administrator here. In a way, it's a shame that we're in this forum today, because we appreciate so much that you're here in Mount Pleasant. Mm-hmm. We just don't have a mechanism under our current ordinances that allow for to fix the situation and make it go away. So, and I get the impression from you all that perhaps you suspected that might be the case, but that you're here so that we can find some other way going forward that recognizes the contribution that you made to the community. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, you know, we have already started looking at classifications, and that's a whole nother long story that I won't take everyone's time up with. Our commitment leaving here today would be to find options for council to consider going forward, whether it's through how our business license is currently structured, through our economic development reimbursements that we can offer, or some other things that may help to further nurture what you're trying to do and express our appreciation. While it may not be good for right now, we're hoping going forward it could be maybe a little bit different.
Mr. Bustos.
Yeah, Eric, and you just hit on what I was thinking. We do have a system of keeping, you know, trying to keep businesses in Mount Pleasant. And one of the things that we can consider is the amount of the business license fee. And that's kind of on a each, you know, business basis. And it has to be considered as an economic development. It's not a grant, but it's an incentive. So while it may not directly address grants, it would address how much you pay for a business license fee. And I would suggest that you go to our business development folks and ask about that. You know, there's no guarantee, but, you know, if something's as unique and bringing business and you're going to grow, you know, one of the few things, because we can't lessen impact fees and we can't lessen taxes, you know, we, and Eric, please correct me if I'm straying here, we can look at business license fees. It's one of the few things we can use as an incentive. So doing that may offset the whole grant thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, businesses, and I run a business in Mount Pleasant as well, and I think it's fairly unique. It's a flying school. It's a pass-through. You know, the customers come and they pay, and the money passes through the school, and we pay for gas and airplanes and insurance and all those things, and very little gets to stay in the school, but, you know, we operate. So, and that's, I think that's what you're saying you're doing, that, you know, it's passing through, and you wish you could hold on to more, but, you know, you can't. So, anyway, I would talk to our business development folks, because part of business development is working with companies, especially ones with a lot of potential, to stay here in Mount Pleasant.
Sure, we will do that. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's everything on our side. So the appellant may cross-examine any of the witnesses or rebut any of the evidence. You have an opportunity? Okay, no? All right, then members of the committee may examine any witness or review any evidence. I think we've done that. All right, so the appellant may have up to 5 minutes to make a closing argument.
I'm sorry, Mr. Santos. The town, because this is an appeal required, we would just ask that our position be put on the record.
Okay.
So y'all can make a decision before we go to closing.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's coming up. That's after the appellant makes their closing argument.
Not closing argument, put on our case, so to speak.
G.
Okay.
Item G.
Okay, go ahead then. I'm sorry. I thought we'd already gone through that.
Okay, I just want to summarize the town's position in that the Town of Mount Pleasant Business License Ordinance, together with the Internal Revenue Code, uses very similar language for definition of gross income. The federal code says gross income means all income from whatever source derived. Exhibit I in your package has a full definition of gross income for business license purposes that's in our ordinance. And we've also identified 3 South Carolina court cases that actually address some specific business licensing issues. And this goes back to the fact that we have to treat all businesses the same. We're not able to carve out anything special for any particular business. We have the code in place. This was proven in Eli Witt Company versus City of West Columbia, in the town of Hilton Head Island versus Kiger, and in Oles versus the City of Goose Creek. And in these cases, they further support the position that town staff has used the appropriate basis for calculating the business license taxes for First String Research, Inc. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so I think we've already gone to the appellant may cross-examine, and you said no, correct? Or would you like to give you a chance again? All right. All right, so the members of the committee may examine any witnesses or review any evidence. Okay.
Okay.
The appellant may have up to 5 minutes to make a closing argument.
Did I do that?
Thank
you. We appreciate the time of the committee in this process. We also appreciate the way the law is written and that there's very little flexibility for the town, and we understand the town's position on that. We would like to restate again, though, the uniqueness of First String, and I think we've got a pathway here to try to find something going forward that might be different to perhaps find a new classification for companies like ours, and we appreciate that opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Anything else? All right. So now the town representative may have up to 5 minutes to make a close.
30 seconds.
Go ahead.
Again, the issue here, the sole question is whether the federal grant funds are considered gross income, and I think that's been an issue that's been clarified, that there's no question about it. Our ordinance does not make a distinction. What I think Ms. Landing was asking about restricted or unrestricted grant funds, maybe that's where you were going with that, and there perhaps is some merit if a grant is restricted to where it can't be used for administrative purposes. That might be something for the town to consider, whether that's functional down the line, but not today. Today we have an ordinance met the requirements that gross income is what is considered, and in fact that's what our staff reviews, and I think that question has been answered.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, so the chairman of the committee will close the proceedings, and the committee may adjourn to an executive session to receive legal advice should they so request. So before I close it, I will ask, would you like to go to executive session, committee?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right, well, then I will close the proceedings as stipulated. Let's see. We have up to 20 days in which to render our decision, which may be placed in writing by the business license official. The decision for the finance committee shall be final unless the appeal process is continued through the circuit court of appropriate jurisdiction. So the meeting is now closed. We have up to 20 days, correct, in order to render our findings or our decision?
Sure.
Okay. Anything else? Are we okay to close the meeting? Everybody's looking at me like, well, I'm a recreation chair too, see, I'm sitting in for the finance chair.
I think the procedures, Mr. Santos, you can close the meeting with the motion that you're going to take 20 days into the rule to
good.
Make your decision.
Thank you, sir. Okay, do I have said motion?
I make a motion to close this part of the meeting and take our 20 days to render a decision.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it.
I would just ask when we probably need to establish a date or a time or something when we're going to make a final decision, because we owe that both to our folks and to these folks. And I would suggest our next committee meeting is... when is that, in December? That would be over 20 days. So perhaps we could meet before council meeting and next Tuesday, and we'll have our minds made up by then. And would we send that to, we would have a vote of the committee and then send that to just notify y'all?
Yes, sir.
And y'all would notify the company? Okay. So if we could maybe have a 5-minute meeting, 10-minute meeting before council meeting, we could go ahead and do that.
Very good. So thank you very much for coming. As you
sure.
heard.
Thank you, council members. Yep.
Our pleasure.
We did have somewhat of a discussion. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. So item number 6, we were just talking. We did have a discussion of business license and economic development. So I guess we can go by number 6, or would you like to say something?
Oh, it's not that I'd like to say something. We had some crib notes to help prepare for this, and basically this was a discussion of how our business license fees compare to other communities in the surrounding area. And
that was my alarm.
Also,
for
the... say, cut the meeting. No, and basically that not only is this our second largest revenue source to the town, but that our compared to Goose Creek, Charleston County, Somerville, City of Charleston, Dorchester County, and North Charleston, we are right in the middle on what we charge on business fees, which seems very reasonable. I'll repeat, because I get it was in our crib notes, but it's something I've been saying all day, is that economic development can be different because we can actually negotiate contracts when it's appropriate and when it brings in money from outside the town. But I think that was the whole point of having it on the agenda, was are we within line of our neighbors? And the answer is yes, right?
Good. We'd love to hear that.
I do have a presentation, but I think you've summed it very well. But if you, yeah. If I can do it very quickly.
If y'all would like to hear it.
Or we can go on. You've some, okay.
Yeah, well, right. Why don't you give us a copy? All right. Well, we'll go ahead and go to number 7 then, approval of the 2019 General Obligation Bonds Ordinance. And our good friend Mr. Truce is in the house.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've also got my partner Jeremy Cook with me. I wanted y'all to get to know Jeremy's face.
Uh-oh.
Here.
Jeremy, you're in bad company here.
Yeah, he agrees. Okay. He knows that already.
So Marcy, we'll defer to you.
Yes, sir. So approved in the capital improvement plan and adopted in the fiscal year 2019 budget is the issuance and sale of $35 million in 20-year general obligation bonds. $30 million of these bonds will be used for the Public Services Operation Center facilities on the town's property at 6 Mile and Lieben Roads. The other $5 million will be used towards the replacement and expansion of Fire Station 4. Recommended approval of this ordinance will send this to full council for 2 readings. The town's preliminary official statement will be sent to the rating agencies in December, with the town's rating received early in January. The closing date is set for February 5th.
Is this a recommendation of approval to town council?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll move, make a motion to recommend full council approval of the 2019 General Obligation Bonds Ordinance.
I'll second it.
All right, we've got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? I see Jody over there smiling. He's had a good day today. All right. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. All right. Let's see. Approval of resolution to delegate settlement authority.
Yes, sir. This resolution formalizes the town's authority to expend funds in conformance with the town's procurement code for claims below the town's insurance deductibles.
Move for approval.
Second.
All right. You got a motion and second. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. Continued discussion of funding options for stormwater improvement program.
Yes, last month at the Finance Committee, we presented data on the possible funding sources for the town's stormwater improvement program. The program anticipates funding of a study, performing design work on some or all of the study area, and then funding $10 million in construction. I would like to discuss a little more in depth the town's stormwater fees. Stormwater fees generate $2.6 million in revenue. 2% of this amount is paid to the county as a collection fee. The remainder of this revenue is expended in a couple of ways. The first is to pay for existing debt service and lease purchase equipment. $554,000 is the annual amount of the State Revolving Fund, or SRF, for Snee Farm, and $45,000 is the last payment for a lease purchase on one of our Vactor trucks. Currently, 14.25 FTEs of the stormwater staffing and their operating costs are being supported by stormwater fees. One half of the annual $1.5 million for pipe repair and rehabilitation is also supported here, and the other half is supported from the town's fund balance policy. There's also an annual funding of maintenance of stormwater assets. With the projected annual increase of these items, if we do not make any changes with our stormwater fees, our fund balance will go negative in 2031, and we will be out of compliance with our required revenue to debt ratio on our SRF in 2034. To ensure solvency of our stormwater fees and to be able to begin to fund a stormwater improvement program, there are various options. The first is to increase stormwater fees. Each $20 in stormwater fees generate approximately $875,000 in revenue. There is the option of reviewing how existing funds are expended and determining if any can be reduced. In the review, other funding sources can be considered. Instead of using stormwater fees to support debt service, general fund debt millage could be considered, as well as any combination of the above. The proposed funding of this program is from stormwater fees, which would provide funding for 4 stormwater construction projects over the next 5 years. The first, we already have, Snee Farm. The next would be $10 million for the 2 basins in the Old Village. The third would probably come from the current study of Hobcaw Point. And the fourth would most likely be based on the next year's study. The program maintains the $750,000 annual for pipe repair and rehabilitation, $300,000 in asset maintenance, and the ability to cash fund over $2.8 million over the next 5 years in other projects. To fund this program, it is recommended that stormwater fees be increased from $60 to $100 next year, and that the CPI escalation factor be included, similar to what the City of Charleston does. Annually, the South Carolina Revenue and Fiscal Affairs Office sends us the Consumer Price Index amount for the increase that we are allowed to do for millage. Using that is required. The escalation would be capped when the fees hit $120 annually or $10 a month per ERU or per equivalent resident unit. We would look to reduce future cost when we update our collection agreement with the county. It expires July 6. Instead of a 2% total revenue, especially if we increase our revenues, we would look to change it to a flat amount or maybe a flat amount with an escalation factor. These changes would provide sufficient revenue that we would not fall below our revenue to debt ratio or deplete our fund in the next 40 years with those amount of projects in the next 5.
Sir, if you'd like to speak, I'll give you up to 2 minutes if you want to come over here to the podium. Give us your name and address for the record.
My name is John Watkins. I live at 4150 Colonel Vanderhorst Circle, which is part of Dunes West. I'm the general manager for Dunes West, and I'm curious. We spend considerable money for stormwater management of 1,600 drainage boxes and more than 40 miles of stormwater pipe, and we pay for it all ourselves. Why are Dunes West residents charged a stormwater fee?
Okay.
You know, I think that with respect to the gentleman, one of the most common misconceptions about the...
Use your microphone on?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the most common misconceptions about the program is that if you pay a dollar, it stays directly where you are. And it's not at all. It's a town-wide program that goes from... The men in the ditches cleaning it to clean out certain areas of town, to keeping water off the roads, to proper engineering. I mean, it's the full program for the town that is more than just the day-to-day stuff that I mentioned, but it's also the prioritization of projects and construction of projects. So at the time, the decision was made for that particular neighborhood to privately install that infrastructure. It may or may not have been installed to our standards. We don't accept it. But nevertheless, there is still other things that the residents of that community enjoy from a stormwater perspective that fee goes to fund.
Okay.
I think I'm loud enough to respond.
No, sir, you have to go up there.
Yeah, you have to go to the microphone. She's taking a minute, sir.
In addition to the stormwater systems, the streets that he's worried about, 35 miles of those and 85 retention ponds are also fully paid for by Dunes West POA Homeowners Association dues.
Thank you very much. I think what he was saying also was we're not sure they were done up to the town standards. So if it was done because they wanted to do it, I mean, well, thank you very much. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean,
While all of the recent roads have been done up to town standards, and the town assures of that, the fact is it doesn't matter because they're never going to be turned over to the town. You'll never have responsibility for them, so why worry about it, and why put it in your budgets?
Okay. All right. Mr. Bustos?
Yeah. And we're not going to get into a debate, but you bring up some good points. But the thing is, we've had neighborhoods in this town who have dutifully paid their stormwater fees, and because they were on state roads, they have never had stormwater drainage. Never. And part of that inequity is what we're trying to fix. The other thing is, I think you're in a gated community. The general public does not have free access to Dunes West. So there are some trade-offs. You've chosen to move into a neighborhood and have it a certain way, and I think that was your choice. The question I had, the $40, if we were to raise stormwater fees to $100, and how long would that carry us? Because right now we not only have old systems that we're keeping up, we have systems to put in that heretofore have never existed, and then one day we may have Dunes West that we have to work on too as we go forward. How long will that $40 carry us?
As Ms. Kotov had mentioned, it carries us for 40 years. That the great shortcoming in that amount, while it's a lot of money, it only allows us to take on, I think it was four capital projects. Whereas we all probably know that once you get past the top four priority projects in terms of drainage, there are going to be others, even before you get to some of the what we call newer subdivisions. Mm-hmm. So it's a it'll carry us 40 years as far as operationally and as far as satisfying the bond payments on those four capital projects. But even at that amount of $100, it doesn't allow us to reach more capital projects because they're so expensive until the debt's satisfied.
If we have $40 and then but an escalator to a cap of $120, am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, sir.
What you're looking for? How long would that take us? Or that's just insurance against running out of money, because once these are completed, we're going to have an even bigger drainage system that the town's going to have to care for.
I don't know. I'm not sure I follow. So how long will the 120?
Right.
Yeah, it allows us to satisfy the debt for four projects at $10 million, perform the current maintenance we perform for the next 40 years. Doesn't allow us to reach any newer capital projects until the debt on those four projects is satisfied in the 20-year bonds?
Yes, sir.
20-year bonds on each of those projects. So we'd sort of be on hold as far as major capital projects until those are paid off.
Kathy?
Justice through. Okay. So a couple things. First of all, if I recall what you said, was it $20 gives us about $875,000?
Mm. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So $40 gives us about $1.75 million annually. And can you move the slide back or forward, whichever way it came? I think it was forward, yeah. Or at least just go slowly. Okay, keep going. Okay, stop there. How to address this? Increase the fees. That's what we're talking about, $40. Reduce existing expenditures. That remains to be, how do we figure out how to, if there is anything which we might say, no, there isn't any fat in this budget, therefore we can't do that. But let's say we were to say, reallocate existing expenditures to other revenues, general fund support of new debt service, or any combination. So I'm just going to say, again, being very involved on the economic development side and looking at what can happen when you bring a company in I'll just use the example, since it's already been brought up today, like a Gear Logistics that a couple years ago was doing X amount in revenue, and like 4 years later is doing 11 times that. So they're paying a heck of a lot more now in business license fees. If we could look at some combination rather than just saying, boom, we're just going to do, because every time you raise taxes, somehow or other, that money just, it gets used for what you have, but somehow it never goes away. Everybody in the public knows that. And so I'm not saying that isn't the right thing to do. I'm saying I believe we need to exhaust every other possibility before, at least that's my opinion, and I believe we might be able to do really smart planning and economic development, which we're all working hard on. We may be able to find other ways to come up with that $1.75 million a
year. Okay, thank you, ma'am. Anything else?
Yeah, and Kathy, I hear what you're saying, but I've always believed that anything that comes out of the residents or the business owners' pockets and winds up in the town's coffers, it's a tax. Whether it's a stormwater fee or a business license fee, the town has to have money to run the town. And so that's where it is. And I'd love to be able to find some other bucket of money that, you know, that where we could get that. But this is one that we started talking about a while ago, and then we found out we were woefully behind in drainage. And, you know, we can look at our neighbor across the harbor there, and they have wrestled with flooding forever. And I would hate for Mount Pleasant to do that because of any combination of things. Are you looking for a recommendation to council, or you're just
at the point you and council feel ready, sir? What we have coming our way is we expect to have the final design shortly for that old village portion, the two basins. And however, we can't move forward with construction until we have a revenue source. Hmm. So it's coming up. You know, we would love a decision prior to the end of the calendar year.
Okay.
Yeah, this was on for discussion only. So.
Yeah. Well, but there's a problem. There's a problem, and I unless we can crank up a printing press downstairs somewhere, you know, we're going to have to find the money to do this, because we simply cannot get behind the way Charleston did. Thank you.
I'd just like to add one more thing. I agree 100%, and I'm not saying this isn't extremely important to address now. We're all on the same page with that. Some of the projects we're working on right this minute could be substantial in terms of new revenue. So I'm talking about new revenue, not trying to figure out. And if we can do that, and we can come up with ways to have new revenue because of businesses that come here, that could help us pay a lot of infrastructure bills.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. We got one more item, approval of the community investment ranking criteria.
Yes, staff was asked to look at the town's community investment policy. We first revisited public funds provided to community organizations. When providing public funds to community organizations, the fund should serve a public purpose. Funding, regardless of its source, is considered public and should not directly benefit any religious or private education institution. This comes from the predominant rule of the United States and two provisions of the South Carolina Constitution. South Carolina courts have used a four-part test in analyzing if funds were expended for public purposes. The four-part test are shown here. There's also the general controlling legal principles that unrestricted grants should be avoided and that public purpose tests should be used, that municipalities receiving specific services should consider contracts with the organization, and that there should be controls such as conditions in place. Due to annual petitions to the town of funding for charitable organizations, the council established a community investment policy in 2016. Each year, staff reviews applications for funding to ensure that the organization meets the policy criteria shown. If the organization meets the criteria, then the request is included in the budget deliberations. This year, we're proposing to rank the request based on specific criteria to ensure that the intent of the policy and the law are met and to help in decision making. Staff will rank each application based on the following: the length of time the organization has provided the service to the town, the longer the time, the more points assigned, the percentage of the organization funds spent directly on programs, the higher the amount, the more points assigned, the amount of the town's population served by the organization, the more served, the higher the points assigned. If this is a required town service that the organization is providing in lieu of the town providing that service, then points will be assigned. The amount of reliance the organization has on government funding, the higher the reliance, the fewer the points assigned. So our recommendation to the Finance Council is twofold. First, we'd like to look at the funding for certain organizations that provide services to the town to be located in the departments that they serve and let the departments work out contractual arrangements with them. They would take them out of the community investment donation section, if you will. Second is that staff will rank the applicants based on the policy criteria and the ranking chart that had been shown. Recommended funding based on scores and funding availability, and to provide it as part of the budget process to council.
Okay, thank you very much. Committee?
I don't have any questions. So you ready for a motion?
Absolutely.
I'll make a motion that we recommend to the full town council that they approve the community investment ranking criteria.
Okay. Second?
Second.
All right, we got a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. Item number 11 is adjournment right at 1500, where we got the transportation committee coming. Good job, guys. We moved it forward and stayed online for today. How about that?
I'm not going to be the one to tell Mr. O'Rourke, but this worked out pretty efficiently today. I mean, it was like an hour. That was good.
Hour, baby. We moved.
That's it.
Thank you, Mark.